Two special guests tonight, Tom Horn, Chris Putnam, back on Coast to Coast. Their latest work, they've collaborated together, is called The Final Roman Emperor. So that is one heck of a piece of work. We're going to be talking about the Vatican, ETs, so many things next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Tom, let me introduce you to two special guests who have been on Coast to Coast before. They collaborated on a new book called The Final Roman Emperor, by the way. Tom Horn, researcher, freelance writer. Raiders News Update reports have been referred to by writers of the LA Times, Syndicate, MSNBC, Christianity Today, WorldNet Daily, WND, and the White House correspondents and agencies. They look at that all the time. Tom has appeared on numerous programs worldwide, once even served as a national spokesperson for Cloud 10 Pictures' movie Deceived, starring Lou Gossett Jr., who was on our interview set about 6 months ago. So let's say hi to Tom first. Hi, Tom. Welcome back.
Hey, George. Great to be with you again.
Looking forward to this. You are always working, my friend. You never give up. So let's bring in Chris Putnam. Chris is a certified paranormal investigator, a member of MUFON, recently presented, of course, the Vatican ET connection to MUFON in Los Angeles. He's a noted author and researcher as well. And again, they've collaborated on The Final Roman Emperor. Chris, always a pleasure.
Hey, George, it's great to be back on Coast with you.
Lots of things to talk with you two about during the next couple hours. And, Tom, let's start with you. What have you been working on these days beyond The Final Roman Emperor?
Well, it's actually, it seems like this is the only thing I've been working on for the last 4 years. And we've each step along the way in this 4 years of investigative work. You know, it all started with us making the prediction about the prophecy of the popes. Doing a thorough investigation into that, and we predicted that Benedict would step down. We actually, published that before it happened. We were talking about it in the media. We actually set the date. We said we think Pope Benedict is going to step down April of 2012. We said that in 2011. We did it on Coast to Coast AM, too.
Yep, I remember that.
That's kind of what really brought a lot of international attention to the work that Chris and I were doing, because when 2012 came and went and it did not appear that the Pope had stepped down, everybody was laughing, you got the date wrong, and it's never going to happen. Popes die in office, they don't retire, they don't, resign their office. But then what happened was in February 2013, the Vatican announces Pope Benedict has retired. And that same day, their El Observatorio Romano, their official media outlet, gave an interview with the New York Times. And in that interview, they admitted that Pope Benedict had actually officially resigned internally. He did it secretly at the end of a trip in March. They made it official in April 2012. And when they made that announcement that day, a lot of strange stuff happened. The lightning struck the Vatican two different times. That was back in the news this week, by the way, because of some of the stuff that an archbishop, the Pope's personal pastor, actually, was saying about that sign from heaven. And also his comments this week about Pope Francis actually being the final pope in the Maliki list. So there's some things that are kind of coming around here full circle, but that's the first thing that really launched me and Chris into the stratosphere as far as the research that we were doing, and from there forward, we wound up on Mount Graham. It just went everywhere.
And Chris, how long have you been collaborating with Tom then on all these works?
Well, we started way back in 2011. Pandemonium's Engine was the name of the book, and I wrote about the subject of transhumanism.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of uploading your consciousness to the internet and all these kind of things. And Tom was one of the early people addressing that subject when no one else was willing to talk about it.
Now let's talk a little bit about what the Vatican's doing in terms of ETs. There's so much to talk with you two about. We'll take some calls next hour as well. People are calling already, so hold off, folks. We'll do that next hour. Tom, the Vatican has kind of hinted that the belief in extraterrestrials does not negate one's belief in God, and of course not, it does not. But this turnaround, this change, where did that come from?
Yeah, well, you know, about the time that we were first doing those Prophecy and the Pope shows, in fact, on Coast to Coast AM, where people have an opportunity to call in and ask questions, around that same time, 2009, 2010, 2011, what had happened was the Vatican, they convened an astrobiology study week at the Pontifical Academy there in Rome. And so they brought together 30 top scientists, theoretical physicists, theologians. But it was the nature of that confab that really raised a lot of eyebrows, because the primary question they were asking was this: what will the impact on faith be? What will the impact on religion be, given the disclosure or the discovery of advanced extraterrestrial intelligence? And so they spent a week talking about that. And then it was 90 days later that the oldest scientific body in the world, the Royal Academy, they met and basically asked the same question: what is the impact on society, and especially religion, going to be, given the disclosure of the discovery of advanced extraterrestrial intelligence? Well, so, you know, the media at that time was going bonkers. You've had Brother Guy Consolmagno on Coast to Coast AM. He was one of the spokespersons for the Vatican at
right.
that time.
And then he passed away, right?
He did?
Is he still alive?
Consolmagno? No, he's still around.
One of somebody at the Vatican who dealt with Balducci.
Yeah, Balducci. Yes,
Balducci. He's the one who died. Okay, sorry, I almost killed him off.
And Balducci was kind of interesting, because Balducci said the Vatican, and he was no Johnny come lately. He was an exorcist, and he was the Vatican's official spokesperson on the question of UFOs. He said that the Vatican was fully aware of the presence of alien intelligence, and furthermore, he said, with not just waiting on them to arrive, they're already here. He said that the Vatican was using it.
He spoke at all the UFO conferences, and he was speaking, you know, to the same crowd that, you know, you see, you know, in the ancient alien conferences today. And he said that, I want to be the spokesperson between the star peoples and the Holy Mother Church. And he said that, you know, to a crowd of thousands, and was very open about it.
Yeah. Well, so what happened was, then everybody was saying this. They were saying, okay, you predicted the resignation of the Pope. You've tied this into the prophecy of the Pope, because obviously Pope Francis is Pope number 112. He's the last one. One of the archbishops, by the way, from Rome, Archbishop Gonsuin, he is a prefect. He's a highly placed cardinal in Rome, archbishop. He is the Pope's personal pastor. He is the personal secretary to Benedict. So this is kind of a brand new historical thing, right, where you're dealing with two different popes at the Vatican at the same time, Emeritus Pope Benedict. But he was asked by the Catholic news agency this week, and now this is a news agency that is owned by the 24-hour-a-day network Catholic television station, and so they're very reputable, and they interviewed him, and they wanted to ask him two things. Number one, what do you make of lightning striking the Vatican the same day that Benedict made official his resignation? And secondly, what do you think about Pope Francis being the final pope in the Malachy list? Is he the pope that's going to, you know, be serving over the church as the church and the world enter into the great tribulation period, and Rome's going to be destroyed and all that? What do you make of that? And it was astonishing. I actually expected that in this interview he would kind of just downplay it and poo-poo it all. But he said, with regard to lightning striking the Vatican when Benedict stepped down, he said, our impression was that this was a sign from above, a reaction, and that nature had spoken. Now, if people don't understand what he means by that, this goes back to the ancient Roman augurs, the soothsayers. And in fact, we make the term inauguration from the augurs, which basically means you're going to put a new pope or a new king or a president of the United States is going to be inaugurated. Well, the ancient augurs, they would seek the gods to find out if the gods favored a certain decision to either stand down, to step up, to become the new ruler, the new leader. But what the augurs would do was, if the gods answered with thunder and lightning, then they knew that the gods had approved their decision. That's exactly what this archbishop is referring to when he says, we knew that nature had spoken. He's talking about this ancient Roman belief that lightning struck the Vatican twice. So it also goes into their Christian belief, the Lord speaks once, yea, twice, which is a New Testament principle. If God wants to confirm something, he'll say it two times. So lightning struck the Vatican twice on the same day. Well, then evidently this archbishop and Benedict, they've talked about this. That's all part of the interview, and they believe that it happened. But what really blew me away was when they said, okay, so then what about Pope Francis being the final pope in Malachy's list? And here's what the archbishop said, and I'm quoting it. He said, indeed, when looking at the prophecy and considering how there was always a sound reference to popes mentioned in its history, what this gives me the shivers, Archbishop Gonswin admitted. He said, although Catholics are not required to accept the prophecy, speaking from historical experience, one has to say, yes, this is a wake-up call. Brother, to have an archbishop that is that highly placed at the Vatican, who is the Pope's personal pastor and the personal secretary to Benedict, say that lightning striking was a confirmation that this was the will of the gods, and secondly, yes, we are aware that Pope Francis is the final one in the Malachy list, and it sends shivers up his spine, that's an extraordinary commentary that was made just this week that continues to confirm the much of the research that Chris Putnam and I have been involved with for the last 4 years. But ultimately, we knew here on Coast to Coast, when people were calling in and they were saying, okay, but do you think there's a connection now? Is there a connection between the Vatican being out there talking about aliens and this final pope? In other words, is something getting ready to come down from the heavens, something that this pope might even recognize or sanction? Is something about to transpire that they're trying to prepare the church for? And Chris and I knew that the only way that we were going to really be able to get an answer to that question was that somehow, one way or the other, we had to get to the top of Mount Graham in Arizona. And, of course, this is a famous coast-to-coast event when Father Malachi Martin was asked years ago on this program, why did the Vatican force themselves onto the top of a mountain in southeastern Arizona? What are they doing up there? And Malachi Martin's answer ignited a bit of a firestorm when he said this: it's because the Vatican knows at the highest level of governance and jurisprudence what is approaching the earth, and that it is going to be of the utmost importance in coming years. And so, by the way, when Chris Putnam and I did negotiate through Arizona State University and go up to the top of Mount Graham, and we spent the whole day up on the top of that mountain, we went to the Vatican's Advanced Technology Telescope. We met with the Jesuit who was on duty there that day. We even asked him about Malachi Martin's comments. He was very familiar with those comments, and he admitted to us that these days, he said, the Vatican only uses its advanced telescope on the top of that mountain for one purpose, and that is in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, that's the only thing it's being used for. We climb all over it. They took the chains down and let us climb on it. We went to the radio scope and then telescope, and then, of course, we finally wound up, what we spent most of the day, is on the top of Mount Graham, where the large binocular telescope mm-hmm. is at, the largest telescope of its kind in the world, and that's where the Lucifer device is at. And we spent quite a bit of time there, shot a lot of film. We're probably at some point even going to put out a documentary, but we've got so much more material on that subject matter. But that was quite an event. And then I'll say this and quit dominating the conversation. When we came down off of the mountain, I think we did some more coast-to-coast shows. We did some television shows. But I made a mistake. I was saying that the reason that the Apache Nation had joined environmentalists in Arizona to try to sue. They formed a federal lawsuit to try to stop the Vatican, Arizona State University, and NASA from building the observatory on the top of that mountain. I had said the reason that they did that was because it was something like a graveyard, that the, you know, the native people had been there ahead of everybody else. Their forefathers and foremothers had died on the mountain, and they didn't want people in there with machines disturbing their bones. Well, I said that, and I was immediately contacted by a member of the Apache Nation. And what he wanted to tell me, George, was what you said is good enough, that's fine, that's all fine, but he said that's not really the issue. He said the reason we didn't want them up there, he said Mount Graham is one of the four holiest mountains in all of the world to all American indigenous people, and he said it is because that mountain is what you would call a stargate, a doorway, a portal, a strategic geographic location through which entities have entered into and exited this three-dimensional reality since the dawn of time.
It's like Sedona, isn't it? Same kind of feel?
The entire area, yes.
Portal area. I mean, these areas have been documented all throughout history. Many of them have been mentioned on your show. And people just are aware of it. In some areas, the veil is thinner, and it seems like the other side just comes through.
Chris, tell us for a couple minutes about Project Lucifer. What a name that the Vatican would coin.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really hard to track down someone who wants to take responsibility for it. But, you know, they forced an acronym, and it's a really forced thing, you know, large binocular telescope, ultrascopic utility, but not for extragalactic research. It's like really crammed in there, and it doesn't sound natural. So you're thinking, why did they go through all that trouble to name it Lucifer? Well, somebody did some research, and one of the reporters at WorldNet Daily, I think, is the one that really reported the first time I saw it. And there's a German politician. His name is Teufel. And in the German language, that means devil. And he's the one that appropriated the funding for the Max Planck group, who really stems all the way back to the Nazis, a scientific group who got the money from the government to invest their money into the Large Binocular Telescope. So they're one of the investors, along with the Vatican, in this huge project that is looking for alien worlds.
Truly remarkable, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, they think it's that important, you know, that the whole world is spending billions of dollars just to get up on this mountain in Arizona.
Does the Vatican think that ET presence is going to come soon, or disclosure, or anything like that, Chris?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look on the internet, it is full of those kind of speculations. There is a meme in the culture right now, a rumor, you know, everywhere, that the Vatican is about to announce disclosure. And, you know, that's no accident. I mean, they've been out in the press since I tracked George Cogne in the early 90s, right when the VAT went online up on Mount Graham, like 93. And he was talking about baptizing ETs then. And I wanted to catalog how many of them I could find who had mentioned baptizing extraterrestrials in the church. And you can find a straight line. I found six at the time when we wrote Extra Vaticana. But since then, Pope Francis, last year, became the first pope to mention baptizing an extraterrestrial to the Catholic Church. So now we have the first Jesuit pope, the last one on the list of Malachi. Yeah, we think it could be the culmination of many prophecies. And we connect that in the book.
Hold on for a second, Chris and Tom. We're at the break. We're going to come back much more. Their latest work is called The Final Roman Emperor. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Tom Horn, Chris Putnam. Their work, The Final Roman Emperor. We'll get into some prophecy in a moment. Chris, let's get back to Project Lucifer again. Do you think there's anything weird about this project, this name, this acronym?
Well, George, you know, it's kind of appropriate in a strange way. You know, they basically look at Lucifer as the light bringer that brings enlightenment. And a lot of occultists see him the same way. And in the book of Isaiah, the passage that comes from the King James Version, classically, that talks about Lucifer, well, it actually came from the Latin Vulgate. And it was Jerome who originally inserted that. But the Hebrew text doesn't have a proper name, Lucifer, whatsoever. Hillel ben Shakar in Hebrew. And it doesn't mean a proper name. It really probably stood for Venus. It's like bright shining star, something of that nature. And it was probably an allusion, probably to a Canaanite myth, because Isaiah was dealing with his neighbors when he wrote the book of Isaiah. And he wasn't thinking about the devil, I don't think, in that passage. So the whole name starts to get a little bit mythological. And then you wonder, why is the Vatican pushing it? Because it's in the Latin Vulgate. And they have this idea that they can use the infrared light spectrum to look deeper into space and find planets with intelligent life.
And Tom, let's bring you in here to begin to talk about prophecy here. Why is prophecy, Tom, so important with all these things we've been talking about over the years?
Well, it's very important to Roman Catholics as well as evangelical and fundamentalist Christians who are looking at the world today, and each one of them within their own worldview seem to see, you know, prophecy unfolding. Whether you're talking about the Middle East, you've got something like five different top rabbis in Israel now who are saying the Messiah is here. They're not saying he's coming. They're saying he is here, and his manifestation is imminent. So whether it's Jewish rabbis, whether it's archbishops now admitting that Pope Francis is the final pope. And by the way, Pope Francis is also a believer in prophecy. He has said a lot about prophecy, maybe more than any pope in recent history, in which he has said that people need to prepare now for the end times. I just think that it's the condition of the world today has everybody who is religiously minded thinking in terms of biblical prophecy. Now, why did we name our final work here? Why did we name it the final Roman emperor? This actually ties in possibly to the extraterrestrial connection and some of the other things that this pope has been talking about, because it is an ancient prophecy of the Cumae Sibyl. If you go to the Vatican and you go inside the Sistine Chapel and you look up into the underbelly of the belly of Isis there at the paintings by Michelangelo, what do you see? You don't just see the Old Testament prophets. You see five of the Apollinian Sibyls, including the Cumae Sibyl, who they believe, they Christianized her predictions. Well, in the Dark Ages, and Chris did most of the research on this, but in the Dark Ages, they took one of her prophecies that talked about a final Roman emperor who would appear at the end of time. He would become the last great dictator over the planet, if you will. And the early Roman Catholic Church fathers Christianized those prophecies and came up with this eschatology that said, at the end of time, there's going to be a final pope. Well, he's here, right? The final pope. And that he is going to work together with an emperor, a global leader who is going to suddenly appear almost as if from out of nowhere, and he's going to get the allegiance of this final pope, this angelic pope, and the two of them are going to work together to reestablish Catholicism for what it ought to be, but not just Catholicism. Her prophecy says the Mohammedan religions will work together with this final emperor, as will the Jewish religions, as will the Catholic and Christian, and they will eradicate all of the extremists, like the ISIS, the Islamic radicals, whatever. They'll be wiped out, and a pure religion will emerge from this that will rise up to oppose the coming of Antichrist. Well, why is that germane now? Because the 24-hour-a-day Catholic television news service, they've got prophecy mystics on there that are interpreting Catholic prophecy right now, and they're saying that we might be at that moment now where the final Roman emperor, they also call him the great monarch, that he may be about to appear because we have the final pope. So this prophecy may be unfolding. But then this Cumae Sibyl is not just sacred to the Roman Catholics. Her prophecies are also encoded on the Great Seal of the United States, the same prophecies, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, that a day is coming in which 'tis thine own Apollo reigns, this God, this deity from ancient times. It was called Nimrod in the Bible, and Gilgamesh by the Sumerians, and Osiris by the Egyptians. This legendary figure is going to come back and give birth to a final world order. So almost regardless of what your particular worldview is, because Chris was able to find that even the beliefs around the Mahdi, the Messiah of the Muslims, is really based on this Kume Sibyl's prophecy. They took her prophecy and they used it for their benefits, like the Roman Catholics took it, used it for their benefits, and others did too. And even some of the earliest church fathers that were directly connected even to John, the disciple that Jesus loved, they quote her prophecies.
They do.
So it's a pretty amazing thing. Then, so where does this final Roman emperor come from? I remember years ago, I was on a radio show, and the host of the show, he said, "Tom, what do you think is going to happen if you wake up tomorrow morning, and all of a sudden you go and there's a buzz? I mean, it's got kind of like 911 when you woke up and everybody everywhere was watching television, right? And all of a sudden it's in the UN, and here inside the United Nations, you've got the President of the United States, you've got the leader of Britain, you've got the Pope, you've got all these people standing inside the United Nations, and they say, we have an announcement to make. We are in contact with advanced extraterrestrial intelligence.
That's right.
My answer was, well, the whole world is going to stop in its tracks.
Of course.
Is this going to be the way that the final Roman emperor appears? This character that has been prophesied and that is believed to be coming, who some might call the Mahdi, some might call him the final Roman emperor, some might call him the Antichrist, but this character that is coming is predicted and it's encodified. Even the layout of the Vatican City, the dome facing an obelisk, Washington, D.C., a dome facing the obelisk, the raising of Osiris ceremony that's conducted at the Herodome, and I verified all of this stuff. I went to the Herodome. I met with members of the 33rd degree Freemasons who admitted this to me. I did radio with a former U.S. congressman who said that I was absolutely right, a senator who said I was right, and then finally a 33rd degree Freemason who said I'm absolutely right, that at the inauguration of every American president, the raising of Osiris ceremony is conducted, but they're doing it at the Herodome, but they're doing that in anticipation of the day when it will no longer just be a parody, but it'll literally be the rising up or the return or the coming down, if you will. And there is an awful lot that the Vatican has been doing that makes it feel like they are indeed preparing for this disclosure moment.
Now, once we get to this final pope and the papacy ends, what does that mean? What happens?
Well, George, the final prophecy says that Rome is going to be destroyed and judged. And, you know, it lines right up with many other prophetic traditions, including the ambitions of ISIS. And, and so we see these Muslim prophecies and these Catholic prophecies and all these different traditions coming to a head at the same place.
Is this end times?
It certainly sounds like it.
Well, let me make a prediction.
All right.
George. What's going to happen is that ISIS and their cohorts are going to use not only a weapon of mass destruction, but they are going to use numerous weapons of mass destruction between chemical, dirty bombs, and so on a day of jihad that is coming. Well, when that happens, here's what's going to happen. The Pope's already been hinting about this, by the way. He has used several of the key phrases out of what's called just war, which is part of the catechism. There are times when you can justify war. And the terms that are used in just war are terms like genocide and whatever. He's used those terms specifically. He's even used the term just war. So he's already, I think, indicating what he's going to do when this day of jihad comes, when this event happens, and an uproar goes up around the world and people, nations from around the world call for some kind of a coalition army to rise up, maybe through the United Nations. What's going to happen is that the Pope himself is going to call for the rejuvenation of the Christian rules for just war. When he does that, by the way, that happened in the first Iraq war, too. They examined the Christian rules for just war. But when he does that, keep in mind that I think maybe you've had Joel Richardson on before,
yeah.
And you talk
yeah.
about the Islamic Antichrist, the whole kind of ideology that's driving the radicals.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen is their 1,600-year-old hadith says that at the end of time, they're going to go to war against the army of Rome. Well, Rome doesn't have an army, but if the Pope stood up and called for the rejuvenation of the Christian rules for just war, and a coalition army came together like it did in the first Iraq war, the radicals would see that as this army receiving its spiritual justification from the Pope, and therefore this would be like a new crusade. They would see this as fighting under the banner of the Vatican, and therefore a literal fulfillment of them going to war against the armies of Rome. And I predict, by the way, that that's going to happen.
Now, the Russian Orthodox Church has actually used the term crusade and called it a holy war. And Vladimir Putin is leading the charge with, you know, Pektik Kirilli behind him. And we know there are ex-KGB agents involved in all this, and it gets really deep. And we document all of this book. In this book, the final Roman emperor, Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's last crusade. Now, when we say last crusade, it's end times, George. It really does sound like
apocalypse. Here it is.
Yeah, it sounds like that's where it's at.
Chris, you had a dream. Tell us about that. It occurred 4 years ago.
Before this book, Petrus Romanus, was famous, I was nobody. You know, I was in grad school. I studied with Dr. Heiser, who's been on your show, Dr. Michael Heiser.
Sure.
And, you know, I was studying UFOs and theology, you know, kind of a weird combination. And I came across Tom Horn, and I knew who he was, and we did that little transhumanism thing, and that's about all I knew. We had an email relationship, and I had a dream. And in the dream, I was on television, and I was working for Tom Horn. And at that time, Tom Horn had nothing to do with television. And the end time started, and that's all I remember. It was real foggy, and I told my wife about it. And about a year later, Petrus Romanus came out. It was doing pretty well. Tom and I were doing an interview. We were sitting in a pickup truck in a parking lot. And I told him about that dream, and Tom remembers it. And at that time, Tom looked at me and he said, I'm not planning to go on TV. And that was about the end of it. And the weird thing is I just moved to work for Skywatch TV, owned by Tom Horn, this year.
Uh-huh. Didn't plan on going into TV, huh, Tom?
No, I didn't, but it you know, eventually it just made sense for me to do that because our publishing house has continued to grow. It has done really well. And in fact, I'm hoping to publish a couple of books by Dr. Michael Heiser. I'm trying to corner him into letting me do that. But, and what would happen is we publish books that deal with edgy stuff, you know, really kind of cutting edge.
Yes.
The kind of stuff that we want to be able to talk about. We want to be able to go where no man has gone before, especially church people. And we want to be able to talk about this subject matter from within our own worldview. Well, it's not that easy then to get people like we would publish, to get them in mainstream Christian media or any kind of media for that matter. We don't really kind of, you know, we don't fit the glove easily. So it just made sense to launch our own television network. It's doing really, really well. We're on some major networks now. And our audience is just getting to be
bigger and bigger.
Well, and so it made sense, but at the time that Chris had that dream, I had not even thought about starting a television program. But the point is, he just came to work for me 3 weeks ago. Chris now works for me. He's going to be producing, by the way, a television program called Supernatural Worldview, in which he'll be dealing with all of this kind of stuff. And some of it he will prove to be fraudulent. Others he'll prove to say something's going on here and maybe we don't understand it.
Does any of this scare you too? The fact that it seems to be coming down just as the book of Revelation points out?
Well, George, just like the Archbishop said, it gives me the shivers. I mean, I don't want the things that I read in some of these prophecies to happen to people. I mean, my heart goes out to the world if it goes down the way I read it. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the carnage that some of the tribulation judgments seem to forecast. But that's what is forecast. And, you know, I think it's wise to be prepared. And I'm not the kind of person that's prepping because I'm sure the end times are coming. But, you know, Tom has convinced me that, you know, we're supposed to provide for our families and we're supposed to protect them. You know, and if you want to be a man, you know, there's nothing wrong with being prepared for when the grid goes down, because the way our economy is, you know, the way things are going, I don't know when that might happen. It could. Our economy could fail. You know, the electricity goes out.
That's
people
right.
People don't know how to farm anymore. You know, Americans are going to starve. 100 years ago, we could have survived. I don't think we can do it today.
And there's too many of us.
Yep, and the grocery stores don't have food in a week when the trucks stop coming.
So what would you say, Tom, would be the pressure point here, the aspect of something that we should truly be aware of, whether we can stop it or not? What do you think we should really be concerned with?
Well, look, the world right now seems to be ready for a revolution. People have asked me lately, what do you make of Donald Trump? And I've said, I think that what's happened with Donald Trump, now Donald Trump himself, and I apologize to people that love him, and I'm not opposed to him, but the people that, you know, what do I want to say? He can't seem to put 25 words back to back without putting his foot in his mouth. And yet, look at his popularity.
Right.
What does that say? I think that that's a healthy sign. I think that that's saying that people are fed up with just giving their devotion and their support to establishment politicians.
They want change. They're tired.
Yeah. They want real change. And also, people know that something's wrong now. You know, my mother just passed away, and she was the last survivor in our family that had survived World War II and also the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl. So she was part of the Great Generation. And at one time, we were a great nation. We were talking today about, what was she called, Betty the Riveter or whatever it was. You see this iconic image of the woman flexing her muscles. You know, the sons and the fathers went off to fight in World War II, and the women came together. They built the most powerful industrial nation in the history of mankind. We built the most powerful military machine. We built all of this. Because we were what Ronald Reagan called a city on a hill, a place of great opportunity where people from around the world migrated here because they knew if they worked hard and was smart about the way they used their money, they could get ahead. There was no such thing as an entitlement generation. Something has completely fallen apart since.
Well, then people can feel that. We're going to be back with both of you in a second. Tom Horn, Chris Putnam, the work, The Final Roman Emperor. We are going to take your phone calls next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. So get ready. We'll be back.